from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, shutdown in Washington, gunfire on Capitol Hill, healthcare reform goes live, glitches and all. President Obama called the stalemate a farce, said House Speaker John Boehner had the votes to stop the shutdown if he would just defy the Tea Party and reach across the aisle.
Take a vote, stop this farce, and end this shutdown right now.
Boehner and hardcore Republican opponents of the Affordable Care Act weren't having it. They want concessions. Leaving the White House Wednesday, the speaker said he wasn't getting any.
The president reiterated one more time tonight that he will not negotiate.
And to top it all off, gunfire on Capitol Hill yesterday, car chase, shots fired, lockdown, and a woman dead under police fire. Here's Justin Herman, who lives close to the Capitol building.
All of a sudden, I see shots fired at the Capitol come across on Twitter. And as soon as I saw that, then I heard boom, 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 as like clips are unloading.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Molly Ball of The Atlantic, Bob Cusack of The Hill, and On Point news analyst Jack Beattie. You can join us on air or online where this conversation never ends. What have you seen this week in Washington with the shutdown? How do you see this ending? And what about Obamacare? Did you sign up? Could you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington is Molly Ball, staff writer covering national politics at The Atlantic. Molly Ball, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And from Washington, Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill, the Washington daily paper written for and about Congress. Bob Cusack, welcome. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beattie joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Molly, and Bob.
All right. As you can hear, I'm losing my voice, but this is live radio, so we're just going to deal with it. We've got bigger fish than one voice to fry here. Bob Cusack, you guys are right on top of this on the Hill as we speak. We'll come back to this, but as we speak, you talked earlier in the week about some cracks in the standoff that might lead to a settlement. Do you see anything as we speak right now?
Well, there's definitely some unrest in the House Republican Conference, especially among the centrists, people like Peter King, Republican from New York, also Michael Grimm, Republican from New York, as well as Frank Wolf, Republican from Virginia. These guys want the shutdown to end now. So they're starting to plot what their next move is. And they have discussed taking down a procedural motion on a bill that could hit the floor. Maybe it's this weekend, maybe it's next week. And if they get 16 or 17 Republicans to defect, then they could take down an entire bill. That would really kill Speaker Boehner's leverage. But at the same time, some on Capitol Hill think they don't have the numbers to do that. And they certainly weren't going to do it when Boehner was at the White House, because there was a big vote that night. They did not want to undercut Boehner when he was meeting with the president and other congressional Democrats. So right now, Boehner's got to hold the line. That is going to be very difficult for him. But to this point, he's been able to do it.
Molly Ball, there's, of course, a huge inter-party struggle going on here. But the party within the GOP has received a lot of attention this week. You write about a family feud, rawer and more visible than ever. You write, there isn't one House GOP. There are, rather, several warring Republican tribes. How close to the heart of this week's drama is that? And what do you see happening there, Molly?
Well, this is still the crux of the problem that Bob is talking about John Boehner facing. He has already conceded too much for some of these approximately 30 strongly conservative Tea Party-driven members, the ones who originally demanded that defunding Obamacare be what the House Republicans stood for, and they got that demand. So you can see that they do have quite a bit of power. There's a lot of outside groups behind them, a lot of grassroots feeling among Republican constituents, and this is the Republican base. These are the voters who have the power to defeat Republicans in party primaries, and that's what a lot of them are the most scared of. So you still see that battle. Again, for these people, Boehner's already conceded too much. But obviously for the Democrats, it doesn't come close to being enough. And for this moderate faction, this centrist faction, and for a wide swath of Republicans in the middle who are sort of a silent majority, don't want to stick their necks out, but do think that there's a political disaster potentially in the works. They are pushing him to go further. And, you know, you have some of Boehner's inner circle talking about maybe bringing back the grand bargain. I think they're groping about for a strategy.
Groping, everybody trying to put blame on everybody else. President Obama saying here, this was at a construction company in Rockville, Maryland, that if John Boehner were just allowed, they could have a clean CR, continuing resolution. It would go through the House with Democrat votes and some Republican, I guess he's saying here, and all the woe of shutdown would be put away. Here's the president.
The only thing that is keeping the government shut down, the only thing preventing people from going back to work and basic research starting back up and farmers and small business owners getting their loans, the only thing that's preventing all that from happening right now, today, in the next 5 minutes, is that Speaker John Boehner won't even let the bill get a yes or no vote because he doesn't want to anger the extremists in his party.
John Boehner, standing Wednesday following a meeting with President Obama, was having none of that. This was on Wednesday, and he said, look, if the Senate Democrats would go along with us, we could make some progress here. We could negotiate. There's a lot we could do, trying to put the blame on Democrats and the U.S. Senate. Here's Boehner.
We sent four different proposals over to our Democrat colleagues in the Senate. They rejected all of them. We've asked you at a conference to sit down and try to resolve our differences. They don't want to. They will not negotiate.
Jack Beeney, we'll look at where this may go, but what fundamentally do you see going on in the heart of our democracy this week in Washington?
Well, I think that Greg Walden, Oregon Republican, really essentially confirmed what the president said, talking to some people on Wall Street this week. He said, listen, when they asked him why the government was shut down, listen, we have to do this because of the Tea Party, which is what the president said. If we don't, these guys are going to get primaried and they are going to lose their primary. And then you look at today's CBS poll.
These guys being what, more moderate Republicans who fear that the push from the right?
Yes, and certainly people. Yes, and certainly people in strongly conservative districts who go against.
Oh, even the Tea Party guys themselves, if they should waver a little bit.
Exactly.
Okay.
There's always someone to the right on purity, and so here you have the CBS poll today shows 72% of Americans are against the shutdown. Republicans narrowly against it. Tea Party supporters, they're for it, 57%. So still that intransigence remains on the Tea Party side. And, you know, Republican politicians like Walden need to look in the mirror when they say, gee, we can't do anything about this. These people, we're afraid of our base. You know, for the last 2 years, they have been feeding their base, deceiving them, or at least putting strong constructions on things that weren't necessarily true. Number one, they argued, Obamacare is going to be a disaster for the economy. Well, just very hard to argue that. It could be inefficient. It could have cost money. It could raise all the rest. But it wasn't represented that way. It was represented in the key of apocalypse. And second, that, you know, we can repeal this thing. Well, that was a complete fantasy. They never had the votes to do that. And yet, clearly, today's polls show the Tea Party people believe them when they said that. You know, in respect to this, the Republican politicians are really like it reminds me of the line in Yeats, we had fed the heart on fantasy, the heart's grown brutal from the fair. A lot of brutal hearts out there and angry minds, but created in part by these same Republican politicians who are now saying, gee, we can't do anything with these Tea Party people.
You say brutal, they say determined. Bob Cusack, take us inside that the Tea Party portion of the House that is driving so hard the events of this week. I mean, I've seen lots of statements. I don't know if it's bravado or they really see it, that they think they could turn the chemistry of this to their advantage and bring out of it a victory. Do you hear that? And if so, what would a victory look like?
Well, that's a very good question. You do hear that. You do hear some Tea Party lawmakers who say that once the shutdown happened, that the leverage would go to their side. And as Jack was saying, if you look at different factions, whether Democrats or different factions of the Republican Party, Tea Party think they're winning. The government is shut down. And I was talking to one Republican member who thinks we're all trying to kind of guess what Boehner's next move is. How does he get out of this? And he was saying, well, you know, he thinks that at some point that the Tea Party is going to go to Boehner and say, well, this is not working. Let's do a clean CR. And this member was saying that's never going to happen because they think they're winning. Now, I think the Republicans, to some degree, are playing a bad hand well. And we've seen that from the Democrats. Over the last 24 hours, Harry Reid has made an offer that was rejected by Republicans, but he made an offer. There was a meeting at the White House that
What was that offer? Sorry, Bob.
That Harry Reid said, I will work on tax reform, which is a big issue for House Republicans. They've made it one of their top priorities, H.R. 1. Now, he didn't commit to any bill or anything like that, and that's why Republicans said just the fact that you're going to talk about tax reform, that's no good. But Democrats, Nancy Pelosi also said, listen, we've made some spending concessions here because we're accepting sequester-level levels. So that, I think, showed that Democrats are getting a little uncomfortable being in the no-negotiation stance. And so they want to say, okay, no, we have given. We've compromised, or we're willing to compromise. However, at the same time, the polls do show that the Republican Party is very divided on this. They seem to be shifting away from Obamacare because Democrats have said, you are not going to touch it as part of this debate.
Shifting so away as the focus of their determination
as the focus.
Here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So now Republicans and their meeting to discuss, what do we want? How can we get out of this? We need to get something out of this.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Shutdown in Washington, gunfire on Capitol Hill, and an historic health care reform rolls out. Glitches and all. Molly Ball is with us this week from The Atlantic, staff writer covering national politics in Washington. Bob Cusack is here, managing editor of The Hill. Jack Beatty's here. Molly, Bob, Jack, people are all over the place on this. Stephen writes, this is online, don't just blame the Republicans or the Tea Party. The Democrats and the president are doing a very nice job of avoiding, deflecting, and blaming. But then here's another Stephen writing just behind, you know, GOP learning a hard lesson, allowing extremists to run things. Carrie writes on Facebook, says, it's a wonder that the founding fathers didn't build anything into the Constitution to prevent the tyranny of the minority. Perhaps people were more ethical back then and couldn't imagine anything like this happening. I mean, Molly, the word throughout the week is, look, this is all legal. Don't get too upset in your criticism. There's a budget. They don't have to vote for it. This is well within their rights, Molly.
Well, I think the line from the Democrats has been, like you said, that this is the tyranny of the minority, that this is not about there not being majority support for a current position, because based on what everybody knows and what even Republicans have said, there are enough votes in the House of Representatives to pass this kind of a bill if it were to come to the floor.
That is a continuing resolution that would allow everything to go forward, including Obamacare.
Right. And so I think that's what some of the objection is. However, I mean, I don't know about some of the hyperventilating about this being, you know, Armageddon for democracy. This happened in 1996. It's happened before that. The government has shut down and the republic has continued and we have not devolved into a sort of, you know, Mad Max Armageddon scenario. So I'm a little bit more sanguine about the continuing health of the United States of America, I guess, than some people.
Well, that's good. But, in this week, we're glad to hear that. But I'm reading you, Molly. I'm reading you
but
about
the really
quoting
apoc-
David
well,
Weigel. On this front, Republicans saying that, look, we're doing what both sides have done. And you're quoting David Weigel, who looked at this and how Democrats have used it around the budget and the debt ceiling, I guess, in particular. And Republicans, what did you find there?
And what he found was that this Republican claim that, oh, everybody does this, uses the debt ceiling in particular as leverage, that's not really true. You have had Democrats, including Senator Barack Obama, vote against debt limit increases, but they never in quite this way held it hostage to demands for leverage on particularly on policy for things unrelated to the budget. And that's the real apocalyptic scenario that's coming up, right? That's the real problem is this debt limit deadline that's coming in 2 weeks now, and that is clearly a part of John Boehner's thinking on this, is that he knows he can't surrender twice. His caucus is not going to let him surrender on the budget, on the CR, and then surrender again on the debt limit. And so he's trying to find a way to roll the two together, to make a deal, to salvage a win, to find some kind of concession that he's extracted from the Democrats. The Democrats are equally convinced that they need to teach these Republicans a lesson once and for all. So I don't know how the sort of, you know, unstoppable object versus immovable force or whatever it is turns out in the end.
And the country over a barrel. Harry Reid, Senate Majority Leader, going hard on that. And John Boehner, this was on Wednesday on the Senate floor.
He seems to be kowtowing to everything that they ask. This is the Tea Party. These voices in his caucus push him further and further to the right and over the cliff.
But Tea Party Republicans saying, look, this is what our voters want. Here's Florida Republican Representative Ted Yoho, who says his district is behind him, not budging.
I come from a very conservative area, and my constituents are saying, don't blink, don't cave in, don't back up.
Don't blink, don't back up. Ron in Augusta, Georgia is calling. Hi, Ron, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a furloughed employee, so I really want this to end very soon.
Mm-hmm.
But the one comment that I've read is that the Boehner speakership is really what is the root of this. Is that if he puts the clean CR to the House floor, then any House member could say, I want to vote on the speakership. And then he's basically lost it, because the 30 people or so, or 70 that signed this letter would vote against him as speaker, and then he would lose the speakership. So it's, you know, it's his political career that's at stake.
Yeah, Ron, you're listening closely, and right there, that's the thing he doesn't want, to go down in ignominy. Bob Cusack, how about that? John Boehner's speakership itself, its vulnerability, Ron is asking about.
Oh, I mean, it's vulnerable. There's no doubt about it. There was a coup attempt at the beginning of this Congress. It wasn't a very well-hatched plan, but you had a dozen Republicans not vote for Speaker Boehner, and he survived that. He almost had to go to a second ballot, which would have been very embarrassing. There's a lot of speculation that this is going to be John Boehner's last Congress. Boehner's aides say that's false. But at the same time, if he does run for Speaker again after the election and House Republicans retain the majority, he's going to be challenged. Who that will be, we don't know. But there is no doubt about it, whether it's on immigration, the debt limit, or on this shutdown, the Tea Party is openly threatening him. Tea Party lawmakers openly threatening if you do X or Y.
And threatening now, not in the next time he's running, but threatening now, they would look to take him down now?
It's a definite possibility. If there's enough unrest on the right, that I wouldn't put it past him to launch some type of another coup if they feel like he hasn't listened to them. But the problem is, I mean, it's a very difficult job what Speaker Boehner is doing.
Heavens, yes.
He has to keep all these guys, or at least most of them, in the same boat, and dozens of them regularly defect on appropriations bills, on high-profile bills, and any controversial bill. He basically needs Democrats to go on board, and that's one of the I think it's not gotten a lot of attention, but Democrats have been very united. They have not helped Boehner on this. Sure, there have been some defections here and there, but overall, Boehner's had to deal with his conference, and that's part of the reason why, a big part of the reason why we're here.
If they would go after his speakership, try and peer into that potential future, because that could land right in the middle of all of this. Who would be standing in the wings to take his place? What would that, what likely effect would it have on the split? What Molly calls the sort of warring tribes in the Republican Party if Boehner were booted?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's unclear, because when they went after Boehner the first time, they didn't have a replacement for him. They just wanted to get to the second ballot, and then potentially somebody might have come forward. Of course, the second in command is Eric Cantor, the majority leader. I think recently Cantor and Boehner have gotten along. Their staffs have gotten along. But they have a history of conflict. There's no doubt about it. A lot of Republicans also very fond of Paul Ryan, the Budget Committee chairman, who might run for president in 2016. He might run to be Ways and Means Committee chairman after this Congress. He's a lot of options. And certainly there have been some members who say, well, maybe he could run for speaker. Ryan and Boehner have a good relationship. Ryan and Kaner have a good relationship. So who is the next speaker is a question that a lot of people in Washington ask almost on a daily basis.
If John Boehner just can't succeed ultimately in riding out the storm, and it is a storm, Molly Ball, swing us over to the Senate side for a minute here. Harry Reid and the Democrats' position there, you said he's talking maybe about tax reform. How much pliability is there? How much flexibility? And what about the Republican tensions there? We've seen them abundant. I mean, here's some senator quoted in the New York Times today talking about Ted Cruz of Texas having started a lynch mob. What about the Democrats and Republicans in the Senate, Molly?
There's a lot of anger at Ted Cruz, actually, in both the House and the Senate, right? You have House members feeling like Ted Cruz hung them out to dry by egging them on to vote for this defunding thing and then not being able to do anything in the Senate with it besides talk about it for 20 hours and then let it die. And you saw the Republican conference in the Senate cleaved almost exactly in half by that, with just 19 votes for that measure. The Democrats have so far been very united. Some of these are tough votes for Democrats. When they've voted against some of the things that the House has sent. Some of these are popular things like the medical
piecemeal
device tax,
budget approval.
The piecemeal budgets. Mm-hmm. And yet those votes, and this shows you how much loyalty Harry Reid commands in his caucus, those votes have come down party line every single time, no defections. And it's Harry Reid that we're hearing behind the scenes who is making sure that President Obama doesn't budge either. Democrats don't want to let President Obama in a room with John Boehner because they've seen what happened before. They've seen President Obama give away the store, in their view, over and over again. And so you have Harry Reid really enforcing very strictly this hard line that the Democrats are taking. And now, as Bob said, you do see the Democrats beginning to worry that that doesn't look good for them. And so Republicans wonder whether if they can turn the politics of this against the Democrats, if they will have to crack at least a little bit.
Everybody watching the way this is being received, trying to spin it to the rest of the country, but tensions busting out all over the place. Here's Republican Congressman Peter King of New York, Republican, talking with CNN's Wolf Blitzer, calling fellow Republican Texas Senator Ted Cruz, saying he was a fraud. Here's Peter King, Republican.
He knew this could never work. He knew that from the start. That's why this was a fraudulent advertising on his part. And he was basically just being a con man. And how the House Republicans allowed themselves to be suckered in by this guy is beyond me.
Jack, I mean, tensions like crazy here. And that's even before the gunfire started crackling. How do you read the solidity of these two sides? Where do you see cracks? Don't see cracks opening, Jack?
Well, I think there's a crack due in the next 2 weeks if the New York Times story today is correct. The story basically is that Speaker Boehner has said to his confidants and perhaps to the caucus at large, I will not let the debt ceiling, we will deal with the debt ceiling. We won't allow that. We won't allow default. Mm-hmm. And that means that he will break, quote, the Hastert rule. He will turn to the Democrats and he will say, you, with your votes and with the votes of 30 or 40 Republicans, we will pass that. Of course, in today's paper, Dennis Hastert is saying there never was such a thing as the Hastert rule. So
that's saying that no bill would come up unless a majority support it before it even comes to the floor. And Republicans have used that to stop a lot of stuff here. Yeah.
That's it. And once Speaker Boehner says that, then the scenario that Bob was talking about, the rebellion against him, will in all likelihood begin, unless the president and the Democrats can somehow help him off the limb he's on now. You know, politics may be all about that in the final analysis. Mm. You don't let people saw themselves off the limbs they're on. Mr. Putin did that with President Obama when he changed course on Syria. Yeah, and of course, famously, that was the model followed in the Cuban Missile Crisis. You know, we said to the Soviets, "You have to take those missiles out tomorrow," and they said, "But what about the Jupiter missiles in Turkey?" And Bobby Kennedy said to Ambassador de Brennan, "Yes, we can deal with them, but only 5 months later."
Quietly,
they can't be
off
seen.
Stage. You know.
Yes,
I don't know. Everything.
Well, what's Yep. What's the the equivalent of the Jupiter missiles in Turkey now? Possibly this medical device tax. It's a tax of 2.5% or so on medical devices that would raise $30 billion over 10 years. Very unpopular, even among Democrats. Harry Reid called it the stupid tax. Amy Klobuchar, who has medical device manufacturers in Minnesota, she's against it. So a deal could be, all right, we're going to deal. We'll open the government, deal with the debt ceiling, and then we will address down the road, legislatively, eliminating the medical device tax, and that will be your victory. The question here is, where do you get the $30 billion that it?
To cover that hole that would then be in the Affordable Care Act. Hey, Molly Ball, what about this John Boehner thing? He won't allow a default. How would he avoid it, Molly?
Well, there's only way out of it, which is to – well, there are two ways out of it. You can either raise the debt limit or you can suspend the debt limit. That's something that the Republicans did earlier this year rather than actually hike the level of it. But this is why Republicans feel that they are in a blind alley. They really – there's a strong feeling that they ought to have some leverage here, that both the continuing resolution and the debt ceiling give them a negotiating position that they ought to be able to get something out of. But at the same time, they don't know what it is. They don't know what it is that they want to get out of this. And you have this very conservative faction that wants probably more than they can ever expect to get and is not going to be satisfied with less. And you know, you can criticize the Tea Party members for having outlandish, unrealistic demands, but look how far they've already come. Look how much they've already gotten. Look how much they've asked for and already gotten from John Boehner, as they, you know, were initially told that this idea of defunding Obamacare was crazy.
What
was
have
never
they actually
happen.
Got? They've stopped a lot of things.
A lot of things, and they've put this in the conversation in the radar as a demand. They feel like, having come this far, there is only a short distance yet left to go, and it will only take – they feel like they are making concessions as well.
Bob, John Boehner reportedly says he won't allow a default. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think that means that there is going to be some type of deal around the 17th. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes a little bit beyond
October 17th.
Yeah, which is the debt limit deadline that the administration has set. So I do think that Boehner knows that not basically meeting that deadline or around that deadline, because a lot of Republicans don't believe it's actually that date. They think they have some leeway there, that will be catastrophic. That will really hit the global economy. The stock market will take major hits. So the government shutdown, not as much. And we've seen that with the stock market, going up and down. But if we don't raise the debt limit, then there's going to be major repercussions. Boehner knows that. But he still has to get a deal. And the one, I think, interesting thing compared to 2 years ago, when it was real ugly in the summer of 2011 on the debt limit fight, well, Boehner was able to, at that point, he was stronger. He was able to talk for his conference. He was able to deal with the president. I think now, if there's any kind of discussion or any kind of deal on the table, I don't think Boehner in that meeting can say, yes, we'll take that. I think he's got to go back and say, okay, I need to go back and talk to my guys, and then we'll have another meeting.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, late night TV had its way with the shutdown. It was funny, and it wasn't. Here's David Letterman.
United States government, the most powerful country in the shutdown, not in business. No, put the out of business sign right up there on the White House. Nothing happening here. I mean, we are like a carnival cruise on land.
That's all. That's what we are.
A carnival cruise on land. Master of military thrillers Tom Clancy died this week at 66. He set the bar for adrenaline-packed espionage novels like Patriot Games. His debut was The Hunt for Red October, here on film with Sean Connery and the Cold War.
A great day, comrades. We sail into history.
And AMC's Breaking Bad reached its final episode. A record-breaking 10.3 million people watched the finale to see chemistry teacher turned meth master Walter White, played by Bryan Cranston, say goodbye.
I did it for me.
I liked it. I was good at it.
Yes, I got what I deserve.
I did it for me in Breaking Bad. We're talking about a week in the news, shutdown in Washington, gunfire on Capitol Hill, and an historic health care reform rolls out glitches and all. Molly Ball is with us in Washington from The Atlantic. Bob Cusack from The Hill and Jack Beatty's here. Can we turn to that shooting yesterday just for a minute here? Bob, I don't know if you were in the Capitol building or in the offices or nearby when that happened, but what do we know finally about who this woman was with apparently her child, one-year-old child in the car? Is there any real insight to in this, what, she was running into things at the White House, high-speed chase up to the Capitol Hill, running into things there, then shot dead? Any clear motive or background that helps explain it, Bob?
No, it was a very hectic day and scary moment on Capitol Hill. I was in a House building at the time, and everything was locked down. We had a video camera. Our videographer and I were there. We tried to get out of the building to see if we could get some footage, and we were not allowed out. This is Miriam Carey of Stamford, Connecticut, a dental hygienist. Her relatives saying that she had some mental health problems. There are some questions about
postpartum depression. Postpartum her mom depression. Is quoted as saying, "Yeah,
exactly." There are questions. She was she wasn't armed, but as video showed that has come out, driving very aggressively and certainly putting the lives of officers, Capitol Hill officers, in danger. Almost basically ran over a couple of them. But there are questions. The investigation is ongoing. There are questions about how many shots were fired. Was it necessary? Why weren't the tires shot? So I think there are some questions, and a lot of the questions, honestly, the Capitol Police and other district officials, FBI, Secret Service, were not answering. So we'll see where it goes from here. But it was a very scary moment on Capitol Hill. Everybody was cleared out. It was kind of a ghost town there for a while, other than armed officials.
Molly, it's a sad story, and certainly a sad ending. The child scooped up by the police here. The mother dead, but a very freaky atmosphere in Washington from everything we see, and you know, just weirdly sort of the energy of it, bizarrely, I don't know, tied to that very dark and frustrating energy in the Capitol itself right now. I guess why people got so freaked when it came up.
Absolutely. And of course, we, as Bob was saying, we don't know why this happened. We don't know what she was thinking or what her motive may have been. But from the feeling, and I was not inside the Capitol at the time, I was nearby, but everybody's nerves are so frayed. And everybody worked all weekend. Everybody worked all night on Monday. And, you know, let's not feel too sorry for these politicians. They're the ones responsible for this. But the staffs and the reporters and everybody on Capitol Hill is just feeling so frazzled. I don't think there's enough coffee in the world to bring people back to normal at this point, and then to have this happen it was surreal, and it seemed, like you said, to add to this just toxic vibe that has pervaded all of Capitol Hill.
Meanwhile, around the country, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, as it's come widely to be known, rolling out. Plenty of glitches there on lots of side, but also lots of people were told, looking to sign up. Here's the sound of a little of each. This was CNN on Wednesday. Business owner Howard Stovall said he struggled to sign up for Obamacare's new health exchanges.
This is the Kentucky site. Click on the individual's plan. So, yes, we have an error. It says we can call customer service, but I think we would probably just get a busy signal right now. We have been at it for a while here. I'm still very hopeful long term, but we haven't gotten any real information. Yeah, we've gotten errors and roadblocks.
We heard plenty of reports of that, but also lots of people saying, I'll have some of that and some getting through. Here's David Monteith in Arkansas saying his experience was successful with Obamacare.
They have several staff members there, plenty to handle the load of people that came in, each with their own computer. They made sure that we had all the proper documentation, talked a little bit about what sort of insurance we'd be signing up for, what would be covered under the insurance plan, and then walked us through signing up.
Bob Cusack, I was frustrated by the end of this week and really not being able to understand how many have signed up, how many have tried, how well or poorly the system is working. Do we have a clear sense of that?
We don't. There has been some criticism of the administration as far as not giving out more detailed numbers. We've seen some numbers come out. And you know, this is kind of ironic from the Republican side, is that they're trying to defund and delay Obamacare. And if that fight wasn't ongoing, I mean, this would have been huge news. This would have been the news of the week.
Glitches.
Mm-hmm. Glitches, exactly. And of course, there's a lot of second guessing. How could they not have servers ready to deal with this? This was not a good start. But on the other hand, there were a lot of people who were checking it out. Now, the administration has said people are looking at their options. So they're going to be keep going back to the site, and it's gotten better as the week has gone on. But here we are, that the glitches has started. There have been major implementation problems. That's why Republicans have been emboldened on Obamacare. And we're going to see, you know, come January, because this is not going to be defunded, this is not going to be delayed, what kind of program this is and how people are dealing with it. I think the one thing to watch is if the administration really needs to sign up young people in their late 20s who would be subject to the individual mandate penalty, which is only $95 in the first year. If they need to get the healthy people into the risk pool, because if they are able to do that, they keep premiums down. Otherwise, premiums will go up. And no matter what the administration says, well, it would have been worse had we not passed Obamacare. The Obama administration owns this new healthcare system. So whether it's good or bad, they're going to own it.
The president and others, a little unclear on how many actually got through, but talking about the numbers of demand, here he was yesterday again in Rockville, Maryland.
Millions of Americans have made it clear they do want health insurance. More than 6 million people visited the website, healthcare.gov, the day it opened. Nearly 200,000 people picked up the phone and called the call center.
How many got through? How many will get through? We'll see. Mary in Rock Island, Illinois. Mary, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see?
Well, you know, I'm in the situation myself. I was actually going to call my local newspaper and just try to get people to understand what's going on here. I think the average person, myself included, is kind of unsure of how the system works, and yes, there's going to be glitches, and you know what? You're talking about a nationwide thing, so how could there not be? You know, it could be worked on more if we didn't have to fight the situation. I told the guy when I called in, you know, and experiencing from the day my son was born, and I'm one of those people who need it. He was born with a medical condition. I didn't have insurance. I was buried in medical bills. Now my son, last year, he spent most of his time in the hospital. Brain surgery, stomach surgeries, you know, catheters going through his heart. He's probably had, 10 operations this year?
Mm-hmm.
And every time we go to the hospital, they tell him, don't come back. He's just been told after 5 operations and spending a month and a half in the hospital,
wow,
he's struggling to get his stitches out. Brain surgery. He went there and they said, get out if you need your stitches out.
Because you couldn't afford to pay. Will Obamacare help him, help you, Mary?
Oh, it'll definitely. I have insurance, you know, but my son does not. He's put at risk. You know, people have got to understand, you know, you're put at risk. And the Republicans are balking about how much this costs. My son is not the only one. A third of those people up in Iowa City have no insurance. He's over $1 million at this point. And now they're telling him to get
$1 million of expenses or debt or what?
Of expenses. He's in debt. My son will never crawl up from under his debt. This is a lifelong situation.
Mary, good luck to you and to him. I mean, Jack Beatty, there it is. Huge medical expenses. Now finding relief in Obamacare. But this thing's going to have to work and work well with a lot of people in the pool or cases just like Mary's son, and God bless him, you know, are very expensive to carry if you don't get everybody coming in.
Yes, and that's the great gamble here. Will such young people sign up? Now, in today's Times, Paul Krugman says, the Republican argument, don't sign up, and these frightful ads that show Uncle Sam appearing in a gynecological examination, that those things aren't going to work against the young people who need to sign up, he says, because these are predominantly minority, they're predominantly poor, and they're not swayed by Republican argument. Well, who knows how that will go? He's certainly putting the best construction on it. But, you know, just listening Mary, it reminds me of something that Steve Beshear, the governor of Kentucky, we had sound from Kentucky. They're very proud, by the way. Yesterday they said they had 12,000 applications and had already signed up 3,500 people. So as of yesterday morning, things were going better than they thought, although they had glitches. But he has written this about the 640,000 people in Kentucky who are uninsured. He said, they roll the dice and pray they don't get sick. They choose between food and medicine. They ignore checkups that would catch serious conditions early. They put off doctor's appointment, turning a condition, hoping a condition turns out to be nothing, and they live knowing that bankruptcy is just one bad diagnosis away.
But
that's the reality. That's the dysfunctional system we have today. If Obamacare works as planned, lots of ifs, that would change.
But it has to work, and the president has a lot on the line here. I mean, John in Boston writes to us, Molly. He says, look, please explain. I mean, first of all, John Boehner has a lot on the line. So does President Obama. John in Boston says, please explain how Obama's demonizing his Republican opposition and adamant refusal to even engage in negotiations demonstrates presidential leadership. Or ask, is this another example of leading from behind? I mean, the president has a lot at stake here, too, Molly.
Absolutely. And I think your correspondent is talking about the situation with the shutdown. But I think on Obamacare as well, Obama has decided that he is sick of trying to deal with what he views as an unruly and disunified Republican caucus. He has tried to negotiate with John Boehner and felt like he wasn't negotiating with John Boehner. He was negotiating with the wing of the caucus that controls John Boehner, and that Boehner could not sell a deal to his caucus in the past. But, you know, Obama and supporters of Obamacare are absolutely holding their breath to see how this goes. There's a 2.5-month runway here until the deadline hits for people to have signed up. The governor of Kentucky, who Jack was quoting, he's a Democratic governor. So Kentucky has been fully participating with this law. Kentucky has started its own program and has accepted the Medicare expansion. In a lot of the red states, which are a lot of the states that have the highest proportions of uninsured, that you have governors actively resisting the law, trying to block recruitment for the law, and the federal exchange is where the most problems have been seen in the rollout. So whether this whole sort of Rube Goldberg machine, right, can sort of come up and running in the next couple of months is really going to be a high wire act.
Watch
to
this
mix
space.
A couple of metaphors there.
Yeah, and plenty of headwinds. Let's go to Mark calling from Boston. Mark, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom, big fan. So I would just like to say, in terms of, you know, the Republicans are trying to hold fast, and they like to say Obama's not willing to negotiate. But I'm happy to see that Obama is finally taking a stand on something that he has made the cornerstone of his administration, which is that Obamacare is off the table. And, you know, you and your panel have talked about how there are some Republican representatives who are kind of feeling that heat from both sides. You know, they want to get the government going, but they're also worried about getting voted out. And I'm hoping that they will see that the government shutdown can't go on forever. The debt, limit is not going to be something that they can tie into this, and that they're going to eventually, you know, come to the table, get the government going again, and maybe they will get voted out by their Tea Party base. And at the same time, I would hope that some of the fundamentalist Tea Partiers will kind of realize that, you know, they have come this far, like your panelists said before, and there's only a little bit more to go. But considering Obamacare is the thing that they really don't like, that they'll kind of back off a little bit and realize that doubling down on Obamacare didn't work, and that it's kind of time to move past that, and maybe some more moderate Republicans will then be able to be, you know, voted into office, and we can kind of move forward again, as opposed to the gridlock that we've seen so much recently.
Mark, we've got the perspective. That's a wish list. I don't know in that quarter who's going to sign up for it, but we will see. Pressure produces all kinds of things. Finally, this was a different note entirely this week, but Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was in town talking at the UN General Assembly, talking with CBS News Charlie Rose, talking about and talking down the latest charm offensive from Tehran after their leader there, Ahmadinejad, saying Rouhani is not for real. Here was the Israeli leader.
Ahmadinejad was a wolf in wolf's clothing, and Rouhani is a wolf in sheep's clothing. But we cannot let him pull the wool over our eyes.
Molly Ball, I know this is far from Obamacare, but what kind of response did the Israeli Prime Minister's visit and that line, which he repeated again and again in many settings this week, get from the administration this week? Did you hear?
You know, it's funny to realize that it was only a month ago that all we were talking about was Syria. But I have to admit, I've been so buried in shutdown news this week, and everyone has, that there's been very little focus on foreign policy. We had the president just cancel his trip to Asia because of the ongoing disaster, the sort of rolling disaster on Capitol Hill. So I think the Israeli prime minister might have gotten quite a bit more of a hearing for his comments, caused more of a stir, were Congress not and the entire Washington community not so sort of inwardly preoccupied at this point.
Jack, do you see the U.S. and Israel lining up on the charm offensive this time?
They seem to be diverging, at least to read our friend David Sanger in the Times today. He says that Israel will be very hard-pressed to strike Iran if Washington and its other allies reach a deal with it. So if Israel is forced to stand alone, Israel will stand alone, says Mr. Netanyahu. Remains to be seen.
Alone, not very comfortable. Riveting news this week, sometimes too riveting. But there it is, very real. Molly Ball with The Atlantic, staff writer covering national politics there. Thank you so much for joining us today, Molly.
Thanks, Tom.
Bob Cusack, managing editor at The Hill. You're terrific, Bob. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Jack, always great to have you right here.
Thank you.
Listeners, follow us. Read plenty from your fellow listeners at onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at onpointradio or me on Twitter, Tom Ashbrook, NPR. Thanks for joining us today. This is On Point.